Welcome to episode number 34 of the Board Game OK podcast, recorded in lush Helsinki, Finland. I'm your co-host, Jonas, and with me is my co-host, Luis.
Hello, everyone.
Two episodes ago, me and Luis predicted the winners for the 20th annual Golden Geek Awards. Now the winners have been announced, and it's time for me and Luis to see who won the predictions. But before we get to that, I thought that we could also give our quick comments about the Spiel des Jahres nominees, as it is award season. And we will also review two games, Bombusters and Isle of Skye. And speaking of Spiel des Jahres, Luis, do you want to start with Bombusters, a winner, a Spiel des Jahres winner?
Yeah, so Bombusters won the Spiel des Jahres last year in 2025, which is the year that it came out both in German and in English. It's a game by Hisashi Hayashi, and it's a cooperative deduction game. It's a game where you're trying to deduce all of the numbers around the table without you choosing the bad numbers. So the theme here is that you are bomb busters. You are a team of a bomb squad that is trying to defuse bombs. And you are defusing bombs by cutting wires. And the wires are represented by numbers 1 to 12. And then there is yellow or red wires that if you cut, you lose the game.
Yeah, how many tiles do you get?
It depends on the number of players. So there's four of each number. So you divide those equally. Mm-hmm. Or you add to those the bad wires, which might be one or two, depending on the mission. And then you divide those tiles equally.
But is it like roughly you get something between 8
between
and
eight
14?
Well,
you probably get the idea. A dozen.
Yeah.
A dozen or so.
You get a bunch of
tiles.
Numbers,
yeah. And you lay them out in front of you on this like nice little stand. So you see what the numbers are, but no one else sees those numbers.
Exactly. So you have them ordered. And the only thing that you have to go by is that you have to order them in ascending order. So you know which tiles are lower than others, but you could have multiple repeated numbers. You could have just one of each, so you don't really know what the other player is doing. And the whole point of the game is that you're asking another player, or the way you deduce in the game is that you're asking another player, hey, is this a number 6?
And I say, no, it was not.
It was not. Okay, and then you know that this is not a number 6. The main thing is that the only way I can ask is if I have that number.
Oh, yeah. Right? Yes.
So then you are helping the other players deduce based on your questions. You get a couple of powers that you have cards that you either get from the start as your character or you can activate if you got certain numbers. So those are called kind of gadgets.
Speaking of gadgets, how much have you seen the gadgets?
I've seen them a lot. Like I played this game, I think, more than 10 times. So I've seen many missions. I haven't seen all of the missions. But several missions, there's different gadgets, and then they just allow you to, I don't know, break the game a bit to make it easier.
How much do the gadgets change the nature of the game? Does it just feel
they
like,
don't change the nature of the game. Yeah. They just make it easier or harder in the sense that they allow you to, for example, choose three numbers. And then if one of those could be correct, and then just like instead of having to do one by one, you could just point at two numbers or three numbers. Or then you can just refresh something that you have already played. Or if you make a bad guess, then you don't lose a life or you get a life back. So that's pretty much it. And that is pretty much the jinx of the game. The way you unlock the gadgets in many of the missions is that you have to at least cut one of the numbers, one pair of the numbers corresponding to the gadgets. So if the gadget is number 8, then you have to at least cut 2 8s in order to unlock the gadget.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So you don't have the gadgets by default. You just get the right to use them. And some of them are, most of them are one-time use.
Yeah, so the game is a little bit pulling you to try to find out certain numbers first for people's racks.
Yeah, and Jonas, you have played this game. Maybe we can explain a bit more of the rules later, but I think that's the gist of it. Yeah. What do you think of it?
Well, I think the question I would have now in my head if I had not played this game before is that, well, why is this exciting? Why? Okay, I'm guessing numbers from your racks. So what? What's the fun part of Bombusters?
Well, the fun part is the deduction. Like the fun part is as any cooperative beating the game. Mm-hmm. And many scenarios have instructions that are like, hey, you first have to cut the 11s. Before cutting the 11s, everything else is wrong. Or before being able to move to numbers lower than 7, you have to find the 8 and the 9 or something like that. So it's just like makes things harder to deduce. And it's just the fun part is like if you enjoy deduction, then this is a game where you're like, Jonas asked about that number. So that means that if I have the six and Jonas asked about the six, then he must have at least 1 6. And therefore, like on my turn, at least I know that Jonas, I can ask him about his six and I can try to deduce where the numbers are. Now, the bad part about this game is that if you don't enjoy deduction or you're bad at deduction, you're not going to have fun with this game. And if you're really bad at deduction, people that are playing with you are not going to have fun with this game.
Yeah, so I like deduction.
Yeah.
At least somewhat. I feel the time I played Bombusters, I was doing really good.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that did not result in a particularly super positive experience, because I would say also that, hey, if you feel like you're deducing it better than others, you just want to play it for them. And I didn't do that, but I just wanted to say that, hey, Luis, take the 8 from Ellen.
Yeah.
Because come on, like, hey, think about what she asked before that.
Yeah,
Stop thinking. Just say 8.
and this is the thing. Like, I think if you're playing with people that you understand and you have played the game before, it can be really easy to get this kind of meta language where, like, okay, I know that Luis plays in a way that he knows where the 8 is. So if he's not choosing the 8, it must mean that he's trying to give us more information, right?
Yeah.
Whereas if you're playing with people that you don't know if they're like doing it because they have no clue what's going on, they are not good at deduction, or they have a better plan. Mm-hmm. So it's like a little bit harder to be like, damn it, you know that one. Why are you not choosing that?
Uh-huh.
And that's the thing that I was trying to say, where like if you're playing with somebody who's not really good at deduction, it can be really frustrating.
Yeah.
So this game plays better with 4 to 5. I think maximum is 5. And the more you play, the more players, the more fun it is and the easier it is because you have more distributed the tiles.
Yeah.
But yeah, you have to play with people that enjoy deduction equally and maybe it's on the right level, or at least that you want to engage in several games so that this kind of meta language appears. Every time this game is played in the meetup, for example, I feel that there's always one person who has no clue what's going on or how to deduce, which if I happen to be playing that game or watching that game played, I'm like, oh, that's not fun.
Mm-hmm.
Or that can be a little bit less fun.
No, less fun for who?
For
you or
playing.
For that player?
I know, for
you?
For me, and maybe frustrating also for that player, because I can also see that they want to do good, but maybe they're not getting the deduction. And then maybe they feel that they're disappointing the team or whatever.
Mm.
I don't know.
Yeah. To me, this game seems so easy to compare to Hanabi.
Yes.
That, I don't want to say classic. I was about to say classic. I don't know if it's classic enough. Card game.
Mm.
Might have also won Spiel des Jahres. Might have. Might have at least been nominated. You know, in Hanabi, you don't see your cards. Everyone sees your cards. And then they give you clues about your cards. So kind of like a reverse Bombusters. Huh?
Yeah.
I liked Hanabi so much more because the clue giving there requires a little bit more creativity and figuring out what type of information can I actually give you by saying about just saying that, hey, this one is a yellow, you know, right? And I have also played Hanabi with people who are not doing that well in Hanabi, but I have never gotten super frustrated in it because I think it's a really hard game just to start with. And then there is this evolution that happens because you usually end up playing it a couple times, you know? There is this evolution where the players who did not do so well, they pick up on it.
Yeah.
And then there is still plenty for you to think about in terms of what type of clues should you give to others? And then what are others trying to tell you with their clues? And because of this, I think what ends up happening in Hanabi is that I end up spending more time inside my mind thinking about the clues I should give to others and the clues people have given to me, which means then I am less frustrated about other people looking at what clues they should give or how should they figure out the clues people are giving.
I guess that's true, but at least I stopped playing Hanabi because I felt that it was too hard for new people to get. I like Hanabi. I think it's fun. 2013, Spiel des Jahres winner, by the way.
Yeah, there we go.
But I felt that it was way harder for people to get than Bombusters, for example. What I like about Bombusters is that it's rare to have somebody that doesn't get it and then keeps not getting it. But it can still be frustrating, obviously, because you're like, oh, damn it, you know this information. So for sure, there's going to be different levels of deduction. I feel Hanabi, the bar is higher for people that are not that good at deduction to do well.
In addition to that, Hanabi has this bad reputation of having such a an importance on the meta, mm-hmm. as in, you know, together 100%, you
and that's what I dislike also about Hanabi sometimes.
But I haven't had those experiences. And because of that, like Hanabi has not been tainted for me. I have not played with people who are telling me that I'm playing Hanabi the wrong way. And this is how you should break Hanabi. But I totally get that is a thing that happens. And it feels
it like that, where you start playing, like you play three rounds and then people start holding their cards different.
I don't like that. Yeah, I think at one time there was a person who said that, by the way, I'm going to hold my cards like this.
Yeah.
And I think the rest of the group were like, okay, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to play it, you know, our way.
A different game.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that and also it started like being like, if I say this number first, then it means that I don't have ones. You know, like a meta starts evolving. But I think even with any deduction game, this will happen. Uh-huh. I think the cool thing about Bomb Busters is that the different missions kind of break this meta in different ways. Like, okay, you wanted to use a meta, but now you can't because of the specific things. It's kind of like it forces you to focus on different things because the mission tells you to do different things. So you cannot use that meta that uh-huh. well. And still there's this tension. In Hanabi, it's just like you play a card and you play it wrong, then sometimes it's like you cannot win the game or like you cannot get the most points.
Yeah.
And here in Bomb Busters, like there's a very clear kind of win or lose. And then you win, great. You move on to the next mission. It's a bit harder. You repeat it several times until you win. And then you go on and so forth and go on and on and on into different different missions. There's 66 missions. I think I played this game more than 10 times and I played maybe 5 missions.
Uh-huh.
I think maybe several of the missions that I played 5-6 times. So I don't know. I think there's this game for me, it's better than Hanabi for sure.
Yeah, but why? Oh, yeah, it's because less meta, easier to people to get into. You have missions, so you have more of an arc.
Yeah, and I think the deduction also feels better. Like if you're good at deducing also, you can...
Yeah, but...
But it still gives you the tension of like, hey, you might be making mistakes because you don't know which card is which. Whereas in Hanabi, you really depend on what people are telling you, right?
Like, yes.
You do not know anything about your cards unless your friends are good at the deduction.
Yeah, but that means that the deduction puzzle is inside your friend's head that you have to figure out.
Yeah, and if they suck at it, then it's just like, okay, well, I guess I'll give a clue. Or I guess, well, and now we're explaining Hanabi as well. So, but yeah, I don't know. Like, I think Bomb Busters is really fun.
Are you ready for your rating?
Yeah, for sure. I will give Bomb Busters if you like deduction, a 4 out of 4. If you don't like deduction, a 3 out of 4. This is a game that for sure you will enjoy and you should play and you should take it to your group of friends or your family and at least try it out, even if you don't like deduction. If you like deduction, I think this is the best game out there.
For me, Bomb Busters is an easy game to recommend to people who indeed like deduction and cooperative games, family setting. They don't want too much pressure, you know, which can happen in a co-op and in a deduction game when you feel that you're failing, you know? So Bomb Busters is a super easy recommendation for those things. At the meetup, a lot of people play Bomb Busters. They seem to have a lot of fun with it. So many people are enjoying it. It even won the Spiel des Jahres. So I think if you want to hear good things about Bomb Busters, there's plenty of places to find those good things about the game. And based just on this description, you know if you should already get Bomb Busters.
Yeah.
But if you want my personal star rating for Bomb Busters, I am really, 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 really leading into that 1 out of 4 star category. Here's the thing. When would I play Bomb Busters? I'm just like not looking forward to it at all. I really feel that if I want to have a harder deduction puzzle, which I feel like I would want when I play Bomb Busters, although someone could say that, well, Jonas, you only played the first mission. It's going to get really, really hard later on.
Mm-hmm.
But then it also feels like the same puzzle. And in Hanabi, the puzzle lives inside other people's minds that I have to crack open. So that's why I just prefer Hanabi so much over Bomb Busters. So that's one game I would pick over Bomb Busters. Month back, I got to play The Gang, which I thought, well, that's not going to be anything exciting. I'm over Texas Hold'em. I don't want to play it anymore. I played The Gang with people who had played Texas Hold'em before. And that was so much fun.
Yeah,
that was such a fun game. And I feel that, that's another game that I would absolutely every single time play over Bomb Busters.
I think you just have to play Bomb Busters more.
Yeah, maybe. What else? Is there something else that I would pick over Bombusters? Hey, If Then, which I picked up from Essen, which has a below 7 rating on BGG. If Then, it's the god, the Ulysses. Mm. You knew it as the god. Basically, one person has a rule. In If Then, one person knows what the rule is, and people have to put cards in that specific order. Mm. You're just deducing together to figure out what the rule is. That one I also like so much more over Bombusters. So there's just like so many different games that I would rather pick over Bombusters. And therefore, it doesn't make any sense for me to give even 2 stars when every time we played, I would think to myself like, I would have liked to play the Gang instead, or the Hanabi, or If Then, you know?
I have not played the Gang, but 100% disagree. Like, I would rather play Bombusters, and I would take Bombusters. I don't own it. Yeah. But I would rather play Bombusters than any of the ones you mentioned. So
yeah, and this is a case where I cannot convince you otherwise.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think people who are enjoying Bombusters, I don't think they are wrong. I do not think they are wrong. It's just
one more thing about
strokes.
Bombusters.
Yeah.
I think like the gadgets and the characters allow these. Like, okay, if you have somebody that plays wrong, it's like, okay, let's leave these gadgets for the person that is not deducing that well. So you could also vary the difficulty if you're playing with like a younger player or a newer player or something like that.
Sure.
Which you don't have in any of these other games, I believe.
Yeah. So all right. Bombusters from me, 1 out of 4 stars.
Boom, boom, boom.
No, but if you like what you're hearing from Luis, go get it. But you can't get a recommendation from me.
No, that's fine. And that was Bombusters from 2025, Spiel des Jahres winner.
So I found a little game called Isle of Sky from a secondhand, secondhand game store, not a secondhand game store. You know, these online forums where people sell their secondhand games. I saw a copy of Isle of Sky going for 10 euros, and I thought that, hey, this is my chance to try out Isle of Sky from 2015, I want to say. Yes, Isle of Sky from Chieftain to King, 2015, Alexander Pfister. Pfister mostly known from Great Western Trail, I would assume. That's his most popular game at the moment. Isle of Sky, it's kind of like Carcassonne, except you don't get to pick which tiles you put into your thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you get to pick, but you have to pay for them. Everyone between the rounds draws 3 tiles. You put one back into the bag, and the other 2 tiles, you assign a price to them. And then together, you reveal what prices has everyone set for their tiles, and then people buy those tiles. And they put them to their own little clan or whatever, their clan territory, whatever they're building. Then there's a scoring between the rounds and final end scoring. You know the deal. Mm-hmm. And then in the end, whoever has the most victory points wins the game. Now, Luis, we played Isle of Sky together. And then I heard that Isle of Sky was, how did you put it? It was one of your earlier acquisitions.
Yeah.
And you have played it quite many times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I used to play it more. Like, I think in the last year I've played it with you once. We played once only, right?
Yeah, this year. Yeah.
And then once before with some friends. Like, but maybe that was even more than a year ago.
Mm. Did you ever play it 2-player?
I've never played Isle of Sky. Can it be played 2-player? I think.
Here's the thing. Isle of Sky on BGG, the kind of, you know, when people vote what's the best player count, people say 3 or 4 players is the best player count. And 37.7% of people say it is not recommended for 2 players.
Yeah.
Which, when I first saw it, it really deterred me from trying it out with Chilla. I thought that, okay, yeah, this is a game that's not meant for 2 players, which makes sense. Usually auction and bidding games are not meant for 2 players, or they don't work well with 2 players. But I'll put a pin on that, and I'll get back to the 2-player Isle of Sky later, because we did end up playing it with Chilla 2 times even. But hey, before we get to 2-player Isle of Sky, let's talk about multiplayer Isle of Sky. Mm-hmm. Luis, what do you think about the game? Are you still a fan? Or was that back then, now you know better, you see more games, and Isle of Sky doesn't move anything inside you?
I think it's a nice game to bring out. I hate the art. Therefore, I'm always put off by it. So I'm like, this is not a nice game to look at. Personally, I know probably you love the art for whatever crazy reason. But I think it's a pretty solid game. I really like it. I really enjoy it. I just feel it never comes to the top of my head when I want to play something.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just like, it's one of those games that's just like, do you want to play Isle of Sky? I would never say no, but so I still like it. Yeah, I can play it anytime.
Yeah, that's my review as well. You read my mind. No, so I played it two times. I think three or four players or four and five. Can't remember. Then I played it two times with Tequila, two-player games. I'll get to that two-player game later, but I still want to talk about the multiplayer game.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not really looking forward to my next game of Isle of Skye. I have a hard time understanding why are some people so hyped up about Isle of Skye. Well, maybe I understand a little bit. You know, there is that fun Carcassonne-like spatial puzzle, but it's interactive. You know, you get to set the prices.
I think that's how I got it. Like, I'm like, hey, this is a, like, I played Carcassonne. Mm-hmm. Carcassonne, one of the first games that I got back in the early days. And I'm like, hey, I want to play something like Carcassonne, but with more, with more oomph. Like, it, I don't want it just to be like the tile laying Carcassonne becomes, well, it's still a classic. I can still play it, but it became kind of boring a bit. So I wanted to play something different. And this definitely is different. It has this element of bidding where you put the price. And if you don't, if people don't buy it, then you have to, you have to pay it yourself.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So definitely there is an element of strategy in the like it, knowing how much money more or less your competitors have, how much money you can price things so that they either sell or don't sell if you want to keep them, which ones would people would like because they're doing something related to scoring or with what they have. So I definitely think there's a bit more strategy to this. And it's an enjoyable game, but again, it's just hard to justify bringing it to the to the table in a way.
Yeah, there is like an additional, definitely an additional level to Carcassonne in terms of strategies. Of course, you're building your own little thing. So one element is removed. You're not, you know, putting those city tiles into very bad places just to mess up other people's cities. You don't get to do that. But, you know, the strategies, so some games get me thinking about the strategies. Next time I played it, I will try this thing or I should have done that thing. With Isle of Skye, I don't have that feeling, you know? Then, even though it's interactive, how much do you get to be in people's faces? Not that much. You don't really get to kind of put a stick into someone's spokes. Is that how you say it?
When
you're riding the bike? And I jump in and I put the stick
in the spoke? Inside the spoke?
Yeah, you can't do that.
No.
It's just, or if you can, it's so limited.
And you should stop putting sticks in people's spokes.
Yeah, well, you know what? When there's common consent that, hey, this is how we play this thing. We ride bikes with sticks in our hands. And if someone gets that stick in your wheel, well, that's on
fall,
you.
That's
on
okay,
you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, hey, it's not particularly fast to teach. There's a little bit of going through the scoring. I mean, it's not super hard, but it's not super, super easy either. So it's not something I'm bringing with me to show to people.
Yeah.
As in like, well, it's not my favorite game, but I can teach you in 1 minute. No, I have to kind of go through the tiles, look at that. People ask about the lighthouses and the small towers. Are these the same? Are these the same? What about this scoring tile? And I was like, oh, I'm so tired already after four games explaining the things. There is a spatial puzzle, but it's not that interesting. Your thing doesn't grow that large, you know? So that's not a reason to look forward for me to look forward to playing Isle of Skye either. And it's not a loud game. It's auction and bidding, but you don't end up shouting at people.
Yeah, no.
Every now and then, yeah, someone raises their voice.
Yes.
But I want a little bit more raucous around the table. So it's just kind of a pleasant experience.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, let's talk about that two-player game.
Oh, yeah. Tell me about the two-player because I've not played.
Yeah, people on Board Game Geek are so wrong. The two-player game is really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I prefer it over the multiplayer game. First of all, you're looking at your partner, what are they doing with their little clan territory.
Yeah.
When you draw three tiles, and you have the exact scoring tile they need, you gotta put it back into the back.
Yeah.
You are not going to even charge anything for it. You just gotta put it back into the back and say like, looks like I got only these type of tiles here.
What if you put it in the tile and put it very expensive?
See, if you put it too expensive,
they will not buy it.
Yes. So some people on Discord, I can't remember where, I talked about Isle of Skye as a two-player experience. What could it be like? And some people hypothesized, well, hypothesized that it's going to be a 2-0 sum.
Okay.
You know, how can you set prices? Because you know exactly what's the perfect price for that person.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what ends up happening in two-player Isle of Skye is that you don't get to set the perfect prices because oftentimes other person has money and the other person does not have any money.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that this tile is worth 15 money to you, at mm-hmm. least. I can't put it even at 10 money because you have 4 money.
Yeah.
And you have to say, and left yeah. over after you set your own prices, you know? And what if you're like a complete idiot and you put all of your money to set the prices and you don't have any money to buy anything from me?
Yeah.
And I put something high that's good for you, bad for me, or like worthless to me. And then I have to pay that price.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it ends up working really nicely. It ends up being like a very sharp experience. I went on BoardGameGeek. I tried to look at forums to see why people hate the two-player version. My take on the thing is that people say that you don't get to see that many tiles.
Mm.
So it's a less balanced experience as a two-player game. You know, you want yeah. to build that your things for this particular strategy. And then the other player takes those tiles away from you. Guess what? That sounds great to me.
Yeah.
When I get to impact your game. I get yeah, to yeah. take points from you. Hey, that sounds great.
Yeah, I can imagine that with the two-player game, you also don't get to, as you say, like, you don't have the money, therefore I cannot put it more than 4, but it's worth more. So if I put it at 4, yeah, hooray, I get the money, but then you get way more points than the money that I got. I think that's a bit better with the three-player game because it's like, okay, maybe this is not perfect tiles, but like this one is perfect for Glide. I put it away. But these two, I think Glide might want this one and he has more or less this amount of money. But if not, maybe Jonas also wants it. So
yeah.
you can do a little bit more of strategy and you can prevent that. Like,
so when you say more strategy, I would say less strategy because in two-player game, it's you really get to plan the whole
yeah.
thing. And then sometimes, yeah, you draw tiles that you really see that, oh, I this was an unlucky draw. I drew 3 great tiles for Luis.
Yeah.
And I cannot put all of them into the bag. So that creates this swinginess to the game. I enjoy the swinginess. Whenever I play games with Chilla, I don't want to, you know, compete over who mathed the thing the best. I want to have some fun experiences. Yeah. A little bit of Lady Fortuna joining the table as the third person around the table.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. But I also see why people hate the two-player version of Isle of Skye. But I'm just saying that, hey, if you have tried Isle of Skye with multiplayer, did not like it, was too soft, too pleasant, you know, too unforgettable, too forgettable. Yeah, that's what I wanted to say. Try out the two-player version.
Have you only played Isle of Skye with people that you're showing it for the first time?
No. Last time we played me, you, and Glide, and that was Glide's second game. That was my second game, and you were already
the first time
Skye
you played
Maestro.
It completely wrong. So it was the first time you were playing
yeah, that's
with the
true.
Right
yeah,
rules.
The first time I got a rule wrong, but the experience did not change almost at all in the second game. And then I played it 2 times more with Chilla, and I feel fairly confident with my take on Isle of Skye.
Okay.
But hey, I still wanted to talk about it because, you know, some people call it a classic, a modern classic. So I really wanted to try out Isle of Skye. Mm-hmm. Have wanted to try it. I got the opportunity and then realized that, hey, I don't really enjoy that game that much. Oops, I might be already getting the ratings.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, one out of 4 stars. Sorry, today I'm a negative Nelly.
Yeah, I don't think this game deserves a 1 out of 4. I think there's more to it than what you're letting on in your description, in your feelings. I think there's a little bit more, what if I try to do this so that they buy it? And then there's more that satisfaction of like, oh yeah, things went exactly according to plan. When you're trying to, okay, if I do this, then maybe I will be able to get that tile. And then Glide will buy this tile and then I will have money for Jonas. And there's more a bit of like satisfaction and frustration if your plans don't work well to make it a bit more juicy. And I don't know, maybe it's all about luck. Like you try to hey, perfect plan and nobody buys anything.
I'm not saying it's all about luck. I'm saying there are decisions.
But I think there's maybe a bit more than you're giving it credit for.
Absolutely. I'm giving it very little credit.
This is a 2 out of 4 stars.
Yeah.
I definitely can see this, like, this is not a 1 out of 4 because I do not recommend this. I can definitely see people enjoying it. A good collection starter or a good way to start, like, to explore different hobbies if you have not tried a more complex than Carcassonne, same as the path that I took, rather than going to, like, more complex tile laying games.
Yeah.
This is still something that I could see myself showing to someone.
Yes, or even giving, or if I would give Isle of Skye away or sell it, I would not feel that, ha ha ha,
yeah.
they're getting this bad game from me. I don't need to look at this.
Yeah.
I can definitely see for someone at the very beginning of their board game journey, Isle of Skye can be one of these games where they can after that see what do they like, what do they like about this game, what do they don't like, and then based on that kind of adjust their tastes and, and future acquisitions.
Yeah. So 2 out of 4 starts for me.
Yeah. For 2-player game, I will give 2 out of 4.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Jonas going against Board Game Geek. Now, come at him, nerds.
Yeah, yeah. And I'll say one more thing. We have played recently Botanic, which is a 2-player only game.
Mm-hmm.
I feel Botanic gives almost the same experience as a 2-player game as Isle of Skye. You're also doing a spatial puzzle, a limited spatial puzzle. There's a little bit of fighting over the tiles. And I just feel that Botanic is a little bit cleaner game than Isle of Skye.
All right.
Yeah. So, should we look at Spiel des Jahres nominees?
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, do you have them open here?
I do.
Now, you opened them before our recording, and based on the voices that came out of your mouth and your facial expressions, you seem to be very surprised about these games that were nominated here.
Yes.
I don't think you are the only one feeling that way.
Yeah, I normally by the time you hear about the Spiel des Jahres nominees, you at least know one or two of the nominations. I have never heard of any of the 3 games nominated for Spiel des Jahres. And let's clarify, there's 3 Spiel des Jahres categories.
Uh-huh.
There's the general Spiel des Jahres, which is like kind of a not super heavy game. I think it's like light or medium heaviness.
Oof.
In general, maybe more lighter.
Yeah, it's describing the weights for these games, categories is going to be very difficult because I feel like they change from year to year, but there's definitely ranking between them.
Yeah.
You know, the lowest level of complexity, the Kinderspiel.
Yeah, that's for kids. That's for sure is for kids. You want to play that with kids. Ages are probably way lower.
Yeah.
Then you have the Spiel des Jahres, which is like, hey, you play with the whole family. Like,
yes.
You can play with kids, but maybe not super young kids.
Yeah.
But you can play with the whole family. And then there's the Kennerspiel des Jahres, which is like for the hobbyist, basically, right?
Yeah.
In general.
Yeah, or at least if it's for a family setting, it means a family that is very comfortable with board games.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm talking right now about the middle one. Like
because the Kinderspiel, classic one. No one really cares about the Kinderspiel.
No.
Because those are...
Unless you're a family with kids.
Yeah, yeah. Those are... pure kids games. So, you know, those don't get a lot of attention. So this year's nominees for Spiel des Jahres, the base category, is Cozy Stickerville, and then Ditto or Chinkso, and then Mortisordi Magic Shop.
Mortisordi Magic Shop.
Now for the Kenner Spiel des Jahres, we have Boss Fighters QR, Moon Colony Bloodbath, and Rebirth.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Moon Colony Bloodbath and Rebirth we have discussed in the show, but Cozy Stickerville, Ditto, or Chickso, and Mortisordi Magic Shop, and Boss Fighters QR, we have not discussed. I knew that Cozy Stickerville existed.
Mm-hmm.
The other games, I didn't even know that they existed.
No, me neither. And the funny thing is that here on the page with the nominated, you also have recommendations, which to me sounds like, hey, they were considering these games for nomination, but they just didn't make the cut. And there you have like games that we have heard about.
Yeah.
Like, Hot Streak,
mm-hmm.
Toy Battle, Wilmot's Warehouse. And we haven't talked about Take Time because we haven't played it.
Yeah.
But at least I have heard a lot about Take Time.
Yeah. And then Meister Makatsu. I like Meister Makatsu. I have played it.
I haven't played.
And then Toriki.
And then Toriki, which I also have not heard about. But it's like what interests me is like there's these games that people have talked about that we have heard. And then there's these 3 games that at least you have heard about one, but that I don't think I'm the only one that has not heard about these games.
Yep. Now, do you know what's happening with the recommendations? Possibly.
Possibly.
No. Possibly, do you know?
What?
So, Spiel des Jahres, what is the Spiel des Jahres award for, Luis? Who is it for?
For German families.
Exactly. And what do German families want?
German games.
From where?
From Germany?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And from a store. They want to be able to get the Spiel des Jahres winner or even the nominees, you know? Spiel des Jahres has this very, I don't want to say retail, but I'm going to say retail vibe-y thing to it. They just want to tell families that, hey,
buy this game.
Yeah, if you're buying one game this year, buy this game.
Mm-hmm.
This is our buyer's recommendation thingy, you know? And if they are recommending games that are completely sold out from everywhere or don't even have a German printing, well, that's not really a good recommendation for a German family who wants to go to a shop and buy a game. They don't really care if Toy Battle is really good if there is no Toy Battle at the store. And I think that's what's happening with the recommendations. They are games that either don't have a German version, or they might have a German version, but they don't have availability. Toy Battle, the German printing is out. It's not in the stores. Yeah.
And I mean, to be honest, these games might be fantastic.
They might be, yeah.
But we just haven't played them.
Yeah. Cozy Stickerville. So I've been tempted to get that for me and Chilla. It is a co-op game where you are just putting stickers on a board.
Interesting.
Yeah. Sounds fun.
So you're saying that they're also trying to make a statement here.
I'm not saying that.
The Spiel des Jahres be like, hey, producers, focus more on German audiences, or we're not going to give the most prestigious German award to the most prestigious game of the year. We're going to give it to whoever we want to put our logo in, and we can.
Well, I think it is implied, the Spiel des Jahres, from the get-go, that, hey, if we give the recommendation, it has to be a game that people can buy. So yes, if you ever want to have a Spiel des Jahres logo on your box, make sure that there is availability.
Why do you think there's no availability of Toy Battle? Because that actually was surprising to me.
Yeah, so Toy Battle is by Ripos Production, which is a known publishing company. They do Just One and other games. Toy Battle has, does it have like that wooden stand or something? So I'm just wondering, is that hard to produce on a short notice?
Yeah.
You know, are they just on, like, awkwardly between print runs? They just cannot ship because of some supply chain issues for this year's Christmas. That could just be it.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting. Well, now I'm looking forward to trying these games out, I guess. Hopefully.
One thing I want to say about Spiel des Jahres, my last thing about Spiel des Jahres, Rebirth by Rainer Knizia.
Oh, yeah.
Some people say, Rebirth by Rainer Knizia. Spiel des Jahres 2026. Really? You know, hasn't the Doctor made this game over and over again so many times? Why is it nominated now?
Yeah.
Well, guess what? Samurai did not get a nomination. Tigris and Euphrates did not get a nomination. Or maybe they did. At least they didn't win.
So you're saying that this is like they are giving a lifetime achievement award instead of really a game?
I don't know if that's what's happening, but I think it's perfectly fine for them to even give the prize to Rebirth, at least nominated, because they have not given the prize to Rainer Knizia Tilelayers before. And this is them saying that, hey, families, you know what? This category of games existed. These are good games.
Yeah, but no. This is
what?
I mean, if that's the case, if they have really not given the Kennerspiel Award before, and that's the reason, I'm like, well, Rebirth is not the best Tilelaying from Rainer Knizia, in my opinion.
Yeah, but it's the one that's from
2026.
Yeah, German version.
The German version. Yeah, well, I mean, no, maybe let's wait till Rainer comes up with a better game than Rebirth for next year, which probably there will be one, and then you can give it to the game if it's actually good.
Yeah, but as a buyer's guide recommendation, Rebirth, hey, I'm perfectly happy with that.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, should we
you
get
heard
to
it
the
here first? Yeah. Jonas called the Spiel des Jahres a buyer's recommendation.
Buyer's guide. Prize. And I think the Spiel des Jahres critics or the board of judges, whoever, I don't think they would disagree with that.
No, probably that's how most awards just come to be.
Oh, no.
I'm lying. Like, I just was thinking about Michelin stars. Uh-huh. And those for sure are like kind of buyer's recommendations.
Yes,
right?
Absolutely. So,
and then, but then I was like, yeah, no, there's completely different awards that are not at all about buyer's guide, but more about recognition of something.
Yep.
By the way, before we go into our main topic of the episode, did you notice that the Board Game Geek Artist Series number 11 is out in Kickstarter?
I have seen some of those things. I don't particularly enjoy any of the posters in any of the series, so I just ignore them completely.
I enjoy many of the posters, but not from games that I like.
There's
either games that I like whose poster I don't like, or games that I don't like whose poster I really like. And it's always a little bit hard because like, hey, I'm like...
Can I guess why you don't like the posters from the games that you like? My guess is that those posters don't captivate the essence of the game nicely.
Many of them, yes.
Yeah, like, but the games you don't like, you don't really care about the essence because the essence is bad. So you can focus on the visuals.
Yeah, of course. But then it's just like, yeah, do I really want a Feast for Odin poster? Like, again, I don't dislike the game, but it's just like a game that I played once in my life. Mm. And the poster I really like, but it's just like, would I really want to sink 40-something euros into a game that into a poster I don't really like? But this year, Catan's poster and Heat's poster are really nice. So I'm thinking about backing.
Okay, hey, let's turn this into a segment. So,
okay,
Luis, so what is it? How do I find this? Kickstarter?
Board Game Geek Artist Series 11.
Board Game Artist Series 11. I'm going to the page. Verify your account. Oh, come on. I just want to look at pictures. What if I... do I have to really go incognito to check at this artist series?
No, I think you would need to. Well,
I'm almost there.
Okay.
Phew, made it. Okay, so, Luis.
Yeah.
What is your pick of the bunch? So, which of these posters do you say, yep, this one is...
Of these three?
Four. Four, yeah.
So for each series comes up out with four different posters.
We're not going to go through all of the 11 series.
But all of these four?
Yeah, from these four.
And
what do we have here? We have Catan.
Yeah.
Harmonies.
Mm-hmm.
Tzolk'in.
Mm-hmm.
The Mayan calendar.
Mm-hmm.
And Heat.
Yeah.
Pedal to Metal.
So these are all games that I've played. So that's the first kind of thing that I consider before buying one of these posters or to consider buying a poster. Then it's like whether or not I like the game and whether or not I like the poster. Unfortunately, Harmonies, the poster, I don't like. Tzolk'in also is a bit weird, the art aesthetic. But Catan poster, it's really interesting. And I think Heat's poster is also really interesting. So from those two, I think I would choose Catan.
I'm going to pick Tzolk'in.
Really?
Yeah. And that was our segment of the Board Game Geek Artist Series.
Series number 11.
All right. Golden Geek Drafts.
Yes.
Ooh, so have you looked at the winners yet? Who won awards?
I have looked at the winners, yes.
Yeah, and I have also taken a look. I could not resist. I just had to go look at them. Now, I did not count the winners, though. And when I looked at them, I thought that, well, I got some of these right. Luis also got some of these right.
Yeah.
This is going to be really tense. I have no idea who's going to win. I'm feeling not so confident as we start this thing, but let's get to it.
Okay. Let's get to it.
Two-player game. Luis's pick was Tact Team. Jonas's pick was Toy Battle. So runner-ups for two-player game were Tact Team and Star Trek Captain's Chair. Winner, Toy Battle.
Boo.
So that's a point for Jonas.
Yeah.
And Luis gets a runner-up point.
Yeah.
Just to recap their rules, we are only checking the winners. So whoever predicted more winners wins the game. If it's a tie, then we check the runner-ups, who got most runner-ups right.
Mm-hmm.
Then artwork and presentation. Luis's pick was The Old King's Crown. Jonas's pick was Luthier. And our runner-ups for the category are Galactic Cruise and The Lord of the Rings, Fate of the Fellowship. And the winner is The Old King's Crown.
Yeah.
So it's already now, it's 1-1. This is turning out to be very tense.
You didn't even get the runner-up. I told you Luthier sucked, man.
Yeah, I got this completely wrong. When I saw Galactic Cruise here, I thought, oh, I was telling Luis that people really like space. And then I didn't pick a space game for an artwork and presentation. Jonas, what are you even doing?
You messed up big time.
Okay. Cooperative game. Luis picked The Lord of the Rings, Fate of the Fellowship. Jonas picked Vantage. Runner-ups are Vantage and Eternal Dex. And the winner is The Lord of the Rings, Fate of the Fellowship.
Yeah, baby. One more point for me.
So this was a category where we were both rushing to get to this one, right? Was this like the first one that you picked? Because you got to pick the first category.
Yeah, I think so. No. Why was the first? I don't remember.
Well, if this wasn't your first category, then I don't know why did I not pick it as my first category.
I think at the moment, like hindsight is 2020, so it was really easy to now be like, oh yeah, why didn't I do this? But in the moment, it's always like tense.
Yeah. Okay. Let's get to expansion. Mm-hmm. Luis's pick was Dune Imperium Bloodlines. Jonas's pick was SETI Space Agencies. The runner-ups are Lost Ruins of Arnak, Twisted Paths, and Dune Imperium Bloodlines. And the winner is SETI Space Agency. So that's a point for Jonas. Two. Can you believe this, Luis?
Yeah, I can. And I have more runner-up points than
that
you.
That is true. Yeah. You are technically leading.
Yeah.
Okay. Then let's go to innovative.
Yeah.
And by the way, about the expansion, this one, I felt fairly certain about this.
Yeah, I remember. I actually was kind of certain they would be Dune Imperium, but you made a good argument that I was like, yeah, maybe he's right.
Yeah, and you sowed the seeds of doubt in me when you described the Dune Imperium Bloodlines, and I actually thought that, oops, I picked the wrong game.
Yeah.
Very happy that I did end up getting it right. Okay, innovative. So finally we get the definition of what is innovative.
Yeah.
People have finally picked an innovative game, a representation of an innovative game. Now, Luis's pick was Eternal Dex. Jonas's pick was
Tag Team.
Mm. Now, runner-ups are Moon Colony Bloodbath and Hot Streak, and a winner is Vantage. So that is a big fat zero for both of us.
A big fat goose egg. And yeah, definitely, this tells you that people don't know what innovative is.
I think this is the
Vantage is innovative? Mm-hmm. Like, why? Because it's a... Like, what makes Vantage... I mean, I haven't played it, so... But as far as I understand, it's a narrative game where you pick a card, you choose one symbol, you read what the symbol means in the card.
Yeah.
How is that innovative?
Yeah, no, absolutely. This is as good of a proof as you can get, kind of like evidence that how right we are and how wrong people are
100%.
About this definition of innovative. Yes, yeah. Couldn't agree more. I hope people get that we are joking.
I'm partly joking.
Yeah.
Just not necessarily because we're right on what's innovative, because we had a really hard time being like, what's innovative, what's not innovative. But I'm partly certain that this is more like a Vantage won because people like it, not because it's innovative, you know? Moon Colony Bloodbath, from the other options in the runner-up, I think Moon Colony Bloodbath is the one that I was maybe considering innovative. Hot Streak, maybe it's innovative in the implementation, but not really in the game. So it's just like...
Yeah, I guess the packaging is innovative.
So it just feels more like it's games that people have heard about or that they liked, and they were the ones that were like on the hotness, but not really people didn't think that much about like, okay,
yeah,
what do I consider innovative?
Yeah, I think, and I don't even know what I would even necessarily consider innovative. I think the problem with innovative games is that often they end up having maybe like quite a little problems and they might be a little bit raw.
Yeah.
And therefore, they don't really break into the mainstream of the hobby.
Yeah.
I don't know. Okay. Should we go to light game of the year?
Yes.
Luis picked Hot Streak. Jonas picked Toy Battle. Runner-ups are Magical Athlete and Toy Battle.
Yeah, baby.
Winner is Hot Streak. So Luis takes the lead. 3-2. I got a runner-up, so I tied with the runner-ups.
Mm-hmm.
Now, medium game of the year. Luis picked The Lord of the Rings, Fate of the Fellowship. Jonas picked Zenith. And runner-ups are Moon Colony Bloodbath and Vantage. A winner is The Lord of the Rings, Fate of the Fellowship. The people of Board Game Arena have failed me.
Yeah, yeah. That's at least good. But they didn't fail you in Toy Battle.
I got like a runner-up for Toy Battle.
But you got it for the two-player game.
Yeah, against Tag Team. That was easy.
I don't know.
Okay, heavy game of the year. Luis's pick is was Speakeasy. Jonas's pick was Galactic Cruise. I think this was the one I ran first to. Okay, let me not get ahead of the things. So runner-ups are Speakeasy and Luthier. A winner is Galactic Cruise. So I get a point. I am almost there. 4-3. Luis is leading.
I'm leading?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Party game. Luis's pick is Magical Athlete. Jonas's pick is Hot Streak. Runner-ups are Magical Athlete.
Damn it.
And Take Time. Winner, Hot Streak. We're tied.
Yeah.
4-4.
4-4.
This is getting exciting.
So I got...
And print and play, we will skip. We have no idea that you can even print games. Had no idea you can do that. All right, solo game. Luis's pick, The Elder Scrolls, Betrayal of the Second Era. Jonas's pick, Vantage. Runner-ups are The Lord of the Rings, Fate of the Fellowship, and Star Trek Captain's Chair, winner, Vantage.
Now, this is, again, where you tell you, they don't know what they're talking about.
Well, all I
like,
know
it's
is...
just because people are like, hey, Vantage is a nice game. We've talked about it. People have talked about it. It's from Jamie Stegmaier. So let's pick Vantage.
Well, all I know is that I am now in the lead for the first time.
Yeah.
I started in the lead, but 4-5. But this is a nail biter because we only have two categories left. Anything can happen. Thematic game. Lewis's pick, Nemesis Retaliation. Jonas's pick, The Lord of the Rings, Fate of the Fellowship. Runner-ups are Galactic Cruise and Vantage. Winner is The Lord of the Rings, Fate of the Fellowship. So that's a point for Jonas, and it's 6-4. And I am so sorry, Lewis, you need to start preparing for your... Yeah. For your
You should have done it the other way. You should have done War Game first.
All right, let's... Yeah, I was about to say, you need to start preparing for submitting our podcast...
I know.
Podcast. podcast to the Board Game Geek Index. And was there something else there as well? Oh, yeah. Sidereal Confluence. Get ready for Sidereal Confluence, my friend. No, it is time for the last category, War Game. Lewis's pick, Star Wars Battle of Hoth. Jonas's pick, Toy Battle. Runner-ups are Toy Battle and Cross Bronx Expressway. Winner is Star Wars Battle of Hoth.
Yeah, baby.
5-6, you put up a cute fight.
Yeah, so I don't think I even won, even if we consider runner-ups. The only thing that I'm happy about is that I think most of the ones where I didn't win was the categories that you chose first.
Yeah.
I think maybe the only one that I chose first was two-player game, and I was pretty certain Tag Team was going to win, and then you chose Toy Battle.
Yeah.
I think that might have been the only one. But in all of the other ones that you... Or maybe expansion as well. I don't remember, I don't feel that bad about these picks. I think I did pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
The only ones were like where we didn't get anything. It's like innovative, and that's thematic
it.
Game. Thematic game, I got not even runner up.
Yeah, but innovative was the only category where we did not predict the winner.
Yeah.
In every other category, one of us predicted the winner correctly.
Yeah, no, solo game I also did terribly, but I think you took that one first. Anyway.
One category I took first was War Game, and I was so certain Toy Battle is going to take it, but you got that right.
Yeah, that one I was certain that Star Wars. That's the one that I wanted to choose anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, I think people are just wrong. I mean, Bandit just won because it's a famous game. I don't know. What is the...
Bandit just won the innovative? Which category are you complaining about? Ah, solo. Yeah.
But it's like, solo game, you also have The Lord of the Rings, Fate of the Fellowship. And it's just like, okay, is it a cooperative? Is it a solo? Choose, people. Is it innovative? Is it thematic? It's like, and Nemesis didn't even make it to the runners-up of thematic.
Yes. That's my... the thematic game, if I recall correctly, I gave you the advice to pick Galactic Cruise.
It would have been a runner-up anyway.
Yeah, that's true. But Nemesis Retaliation didn't even give you that runner-up.
Yeah, I was.
Status.
I unfortunately knew the answer. I thought for a second that I had won. I felt pretty confident starting to see the. And then I was like, "Well, wait, or we tied?" And then I recount, and I was like, "Oh no, it's 6-5. Damn it!"
Yeah, no. Since I knew that the war game is going to go for you, at one point I really thought that I was going to lose this. Now, Lewis, so what advice will you give for yourself for next year? Regarding the picks.
First off, I think we should change the scoring. It wouldn't have mattered in this case, but I think we should make the runner-ups matter a bit more.
Yeah.
So every runner-up is maybe half a point.
Yeah, I feel like now we're getting too good at this.
Yeah.
Because now it is so important for you to be able to pick the category first.
Yeah.
And of course it's supposed to be important, but now my prediction for next year, if we keep the same format, is that it's about... I don't know. Well, you know, we pick a category and whoever picks the category picks the winner. And then there is one or two categories
it misses. Because I think like two-player game, maybe even heavy game of the year. Well, maybe not. Or expansion. I can imagine that they were probably very tied and it was just like some votes that made the difference. So
Hey, you know what? Actually, I'm going to take that back what I said because I had, for the preparation for the draft, I had, you know, picked my picks, two picks for every category, yeah. right? One that I would pick first.
Yeah.
And then if Louis picks this one, I'll pick the other one. And then for every category, I had put this confidence
level.
Yeah. Basically, how confident I am that this is going to be the winner, which meant I'm going to pick those categories first.
Yeah.
Right. I just assumed you are probably thinking about these things the same way.
Yeah, I was.
So I did not end up putting a lot of high confidence picks. And there were a lot of them, most of the, I think I only had like two, three where I felt that, oh, I'm super confident about this.
Okay.
Rest of them, I was like, I don't really know.
Yeah, exactly.
And because of this, next year, I think I won't have more super confident categories. And therefore, things can go either way.
Yeah, but then at the same time, you chose Luthier for artwork and presentation.
Yeah, so that was dumb.
You just need to...
I need to get better.
Investigate more, Jonas. But I think we should make runners-up half a point because four categories where it could have been better if we had been luckier. Well, not even lucky. If we had had maybe more confidence or the people would have voted smarter, it could have made a difference for either way. Maybe it doesn't matter because we have exactly the same points in runner-ups. Oh, no, with runner-ups, I have...
Yeah, you're leading by one. But if we would have applied that scoring, I still would have won.
Exactly. But what if like I had gotten the solo... or the thematic game runner-up, then we could have tied.
Yeah, or what if I would have gotten zero runner-ups?
Exactly.
Yeah. No, I'm happy doing half a point for runner-ups.
Yeah.
Now, what? Any other advice you want to give for yourself?
For myself, is like...
Next year.
Consider the
stupidity of people.
Consider the hotness of the game, the reputation of the game, not only what I think people... Consider that people are not going to be rational about games. Hmm. It's not innovative, but people are talking about it.
Yeah.
It's from a famous company. It's divisive. Therefore, Vantage is going to win.
Yep. My advice for next year is IP. It's all about the IP. Look for that IP.
Yeah.
Big IP. No, not just any IP. No.
Big IP.
Big IP.
Yeah.
Or space.
Yeah.
Big IP or space. Yeah. Anything else you want
to
add?
No, I have to play Sidereal Confluence happily, and I will submit our podcast to Board Game Geek.
Thank you very much. We want to thank you for your time. Our next episode airs in 2 weeks. In the meantime, you can visit boardgameok.com for more information about the show.
Bye-bye, okay?